not yesterday, but a week ago yesterday, Kathleen and I were at a birthday party for a three-year-old named Sonia. And her two fathers, David and Rajiv, were greeting another couple that came through the door, and we were just beginning to have a conversation, and David said to the friend who came in, "Why are they killing us?" And I immediately said, "Because you are getting closer to having full civil rights. The closer you get, the more threatened are those who oppose you." After Tyler Clementi's suicide, the gang-related beatings in the Bronx, and Palladino's idiotic statements, and a man beaten of all places in Stonewall, I felt necessary to replace my previously announced topic, which was going to use as its text the TV series Mad Men, which is about Madison Avenue. And it begins in 1958 and now is about on 1966. And it's a very interesting show. And I hope to get back to that theme later. But I recall in that show there was, in the first couple of seasons, a gay character on that show who was an advertising man on Madison Avenue, and in the style of the time, deeply closeted, at least partially even to himself. He was married uneasily, and during the course of his workday, he had to endure all sorts of jokes silently and even laugh along with them. And when he turned down an overture from a male client, the client got him fired. No questions asked, because it was a time when even being suspected of being gay was grounds for blackmail and being fired. And so, as we look back, we see today that some progress has been made. And the reason I believe that equal rights for our lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transsexual people are near is that Tyler Clementi's suicide is a big story. The gang-related beatings are a big story. The Palladino comments for a few days were a big story. I especially liked where he said that his comments were poorly worded, after which the Orthodox rabbi who had invited him to speak withdrew his support. So now the left thinks he's a bigot, and the right thinks he's a coward, and both are right. Sometimes there is justice in the world. It was not so many years ago that Tyler Clementi's suicide would not be a big story. It would not even have been reported. It would have all been very hush-hush on campus with rumor and innuendo. And even today, there is some question whether those who bullied him committed a crime, and if so, what fashion of crime. The gang beatings would not have been reported. There was no political or criminal price to be paid for gay bashing because there was no movement for gay rights. Though, in fact, the Unitarian Universalist, and this is one of my all-time favorite names for a bureaucratic entity, the UUA Office of Gay Affairs, was funded with exactly that name in 1974. Some of us were in favor of that in a more spirited way than others. It later became the Office of Gay Concerns, and I think something has lost from our movement ever since then. But the fact that Tyler Clementi is now big news and seems to have a lasting effect on many of us makes me wonder if Tyler Clementi is the new Emmett Till. Now, here's a disclaimer. There are dangers of comparing different eras. Dangers in comparing the different kinds of suffering and oppression of different peoples in different times. I understand that. There are different claims to different kinds of civil rights. Yet, can not one oppressed people draw strength from the lessons and progress of another's? The civil rights movement in this country looked back to Gandhi, and more distantly to the Jews of the Old Testament as they moved from slavery to liberation. And so I think that we can take some strength and information by the lessons of the past and how they may be repeating in a new way in the present. Some of you will recall the story of Emmett Till quite clearly. He was 14 years old. He lived in the Chicago area. He had family down in Mississippi. And though his mother was against it, he decided he wanted to go down and see the Mississippi branch of the family in 1955 at age 14. And he was warned that things were different for black people down in Mississippi. While he was visiting with some children his own age, because he was a child, he took out some pictures of some of the kids that he was in school with, and some of them were white. And he may or may not have said something untoward to the white shopkeeper of the grocery store, but whatever it was, there were those who thought he had acted inappropriately. And later that evening, where he was staying at an uncle's house, was visited by the extended family of the woman who worked in the grocery store, I think her brother-in-law and a friend of the family. And they kidnapped Emmett Till, and they beat him, and they gouged an eye out, and they finally shot him in the head and dropped him in the Tallahatchie River, tied to a piece of equipment from a cotton gin. He was killed in August 15, 1955. His killers went on trial and were acquitted in less than an hour in September. And in December, the Montgomery bus boycott began. And Rosa Parks is quoted as saying, "When I sat down on that bus, I thought of Emmett Till." It was a cause celeb within the country, partially because Emmett Till's mother, in her courage, insisted on an open casket. And Jet Magazine ran a photograph of the open casket. And I compare that horrid open casket photo with the kind, open, vulnerable face of another child, the face of Tyler Clementi that we have seen in the newspapers and the internet. And in both deaths, there were uncertainty of exactly what was the nature of the crime. There was an attitude toward the jury that part of the reason they were acquitted was that the law in Mississippi required for murder either the death penalty, life in prison, or acquittal. And in the accounts of the interviews of the jury in subsequent years, the jury did feel that a crime had been committed, but that somehow the death of one black teenager did not warrant so severe a penalty. There was a crime, but they were uncertain of the nature of the crime. Ordinary Americans who had been completely disengaged from the issue for the first time became attentive. They may not have acted, but they now understood better the problem and became much more sympathetic to those demanding their civil rights. They realized, many for the first time, that it was not just about eating lunch at a counter in Greensboro. It's not even about getting legally married. It's about life and death. But now remember also what happened between 1955, when Emmett Till was killed, 1964, when the Civil Rights Bill was signed. Those who opposed the civil rights became fewer in number and more violent in their response. And we may be seeing this again. And after the death of Emmett Till, in the marches in the South, Unitarians were plentiful, and some died. And in this struggle, we are again plentiful, and some have died. For remember the shooting in the Unitarian Church in Knoxville a couple of years ago. The shooter very explicitly said one of the reasons that church was chosen was its support for gay rights. Unitarian Universalists have always stood for equal rights for all and have been out in front for gay rights. But now we have to be not only out front, but down home. Like those who were outraged at the death of Emmett Till, one does not need to be an activist to stand for justice. You just have to be not silent. And Unitarian Universalists are great at being not silent. To speak up for equality and justice where and when you can, as in fact I know you already do. Here are some other ways. There is a program within the Unitarian Universalist Association called Standing on the Side of Love. If you go to our website, there you can click on the website. It was actually started as a response to the shooting in the Knoxville churches. It has, amongst other things, and it would be less relevant for a congregation in New Jersey, relatively speaking, than it would be in some of the other areas, but it gives talking points about how to defend your church's support of gay rights, how to address press releases, how to be in the world and in your community, how to be out for gay rights in your community as an institution and as an individual. And I invite you to check on that website, see what they're doing, and perhaps bring back to us some ideas where we can be more forthright and out in our expression about that, and I will be doing the same thing. Let me know what you think we might do to help the Heart of Orange be more open to the rights of gay people. There was another movement that Barry Peterson first told me about at the board meeting this week called It Gets Better, which is actually doesn't yet have a website. It's a movement without a website. It's more subversive than the Tea Party. I like that. But what it is, if you go on It Gets Better on YouTube, it's a series and growing series of gay and lesbian people talking through the video to younger people like Tyler Clemente to say that the bullying you are experiencing as a gay lesbian person, the difficulty you're having with your parents, with your church, people who are successful adults telling directly to those who listen to them, it gets better. If you're a gay or lesbian person, it gets better. You know, my feeling is, for any 15-year-old, whatever they're experiencing, whoever they are, adults need to tell them that it gets better. Because it's a tough kind of period of life, it's a confusing period of life, and for people who are different even in the slightest, let alone more profoundly and more personally, it's extremely difficult. So it gets better is a really excellent way of teaching from one generation to the other. Another excellent place for this is, frankly, Unitarian Universalist youth groups and are coming of age. I know of no more completely equalitarian organization than the way our young people are with each other. And amongst the gay and lesbian Unitarian Universalist ministers who have been ordained over the last 10 or 20 years, almost all of them had been inspired to become Unitarian Universalist ministers by their experience in Unitarian Universalist youth groups, where for the first time they were accepted for who they are. And there's another aspect where I feel I have not been outspoken enough. And that is in our relationships with people who are in churches and religious organizations that are frankly homophobic, and calling them to task for this and challenging them to this. And this includes, frankly, a lot of black churches that have been our allies in so many instances over the years. And I know what the Bible says. I know the Bible also says, slaves, obey your masters. And a lot of those churches managed to overlook that and went to the Old Testament where it said, let my people go. There is, as far as I know, one former member of the National Basketball Association who came out as gay. His name is John Amici, and I always followed him because he went to high school in my hometown of Toledo, and they played basketball in my college at Vanderbilt, so I knew him even before he was gay. He's not a guy that gets gay bashed because he's 6'10" and weighs 270 pounds, but he was interviewed about that specific issue of where the Old Testament calls being gay essentially an abomination. And he said, well, you know, the Old Testament calls a lot of things in the Old Testament an abomination. For instance, the eating of shellfish. And as long as my sin is no greater than eating shrimp, I can live with that. In the if you only have to be not silent department, I leave you with one example. It's Uncle Mo's right. Uncle Mo's was the man where Emmett Till was staying. He was Emmett Till's cousin. And this quotation is from Emmett Till's mother, taken from a book called Voices of Freedom, which is the transcript of interviews with firsthand accounts of the civil rights struggle that was published along with a PBS documentary, Eyes on the Prize, that came out a few years ago, which was basically funded through efforts by Unitarian Universalists and Jack Mendelson in particular. And so this is Emmett Till's mother's account of what Uncle Mose did. This was at the trial of Emmett Till's murderers. The key point came when they said to him, I'm going to ask you to look around in the courtroom and see if you see any man here that came to you and knocked on your door that night. And so this old man, I mean, talk about courage. He looked around and in his southern English, he said, dar he be. And he pointed straight at J.W. Milam. It was like history in that courtroom. Mose Wright was the first black man to testify in a murder case against a white man in the state of Mississippi. It took the jury less than an hour to return a not guilty verdict, despite his and other eyewitness testimony. But the voice of Mose Wright echoed the sound of justice, not only in Mississippi, but across the land. And when Rosa Parks sat down, she remembered Emmett Till. Now it falls to us to make the sound of justice and remember Tyler Clemente.